Welcome to the Brexit Podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer Han, and I think it's fair to say that we've always been captivated by the lives of the rich and powerful. I mean, that's why there are things like Page Six and the Sunday Times Rich List, right? Naturally then, we're also interested in what they think of all this Brexit business. Are they worried about their potentially dwindling assets, or are they actually too busy bathing in a Scrooge McDuck-like vault to care? Nobody knows. Actually, somebody does know, and that's why Tim talked to Ron Watts, the compiler of the Rich List at the Sunday Times, to find out exactly that. So stay tuned for a rare glimpse into the lives and wallets of the 1%. If you enjoy the show, please do rate us on your podcast platform of choice, as it really helps us out. While you're there, you might as well subscribe so you get all upcoming episodes sent straight to your phone. Please also send in your requests for future guests and say hi over on brexitpodcast.com or on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Brexit Podcast.
It's a warm welcome to our next guest. He was formerly the economics correspondent at the Sunday Times and the deputy political editor at the Sunday Telegraph. He's now got a job title that sounds like he should be one of the guys who they guess the occupation of on What's My Line. Warm welcome to Rob Watts. How are you, Rob?
Hi, Tim. Thanks. I'm well. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, so what is your current occupation then, Rob?
So I compile the Sunday Times Rich List, which is a list of the 1,000 richest, wealthiest people in the UK. You would need, Tim, 103 million to have got onto the list this year. I don't know if you've got that, and we missed you out. But we count anyone who's British-born, so someone who's living in Canada but was born in Britain would qualify. And we also cover anyone who we're confident are here. So super rich, wealthy people who are born anywhere in the world but who are based here, we'd count them too.
I see. Can it be, at times, is it difficult to uncover some of these people then?
It is extremely difficult. I mean, often these are people who stay out of the press, stay out of the media. They're deeply private people. They just want to, as one said to me the other day, in fact, I want to be in the newspapers three times in my life, when I'm born, when I get married, and when I die. That's it for me, thank you very much. So they have no interest in having a public profile, but we think their stories are often extremely interesting, often inspiring, and we like to tell them.
See, that's the thing, isn't it? They may have no interest, but people are very interested in them. Am I right in thinking that it's the biggest selling week of the Sunday Times when the Rich List is put out? Is that correct?
Tim, you're absolutely right. Yes, we get a circulation spike of around 10% each year. Now, part of that is because millions of people know what the Sunday Times Rich List is. It's been going for the best part of 30 years. And there's something curiously interesting about the British relationship with wealth. We're very private about money, aren't we? We don't like necessarily talking about it. But that hides, I think, a sort of secret fascination with it. And I think there's also quite a sort of positive way in which people are intrigued by how these people made their money and wonder, hey, could I do it too?
Yeah. So what does your job actually entail then? Because it's not like you're doing the weekly beat anymore. You just squirreled away somewhere, kind of getting all these facts and figures throughout the year, and then one big bang when it's released.
I wish I could say my life involved jumping from super yacht to super yacht. It's not. It's not like that. No. It's a very, very numbers based, accounts based job. I spend a huge amount of my time looking at company accounts, looking at shareholdings in public companies. Some of these people do want to talk. There's a feeling amongst many of them that the Sunday Times Rich List is almost a matter of public record, and they want the numbers attributed to them. They want them to be right. So many of them are very, very frank with us, and we get sent tax returns. I was sitting in a hotel in London a few months ago, and one of the people we write about was so anxious that we believed what he said about his wealth, that he showed me a personal bank statement, personal portfolio from a major bank on his smartphone to me. It was a balance of several hundred million euros.
Good grief. Wow. Are they more vexed? Are they more vexed when you overestimate or underestimate how much they're worth?
Very interesting question, that. I mean, I always think that there's sort of three approaches most people take. There's either the first approach, which people don't want to talk to us at all, don't return calls, and I can understand that. People often are quite private in that way. There's another second type of person where they're keen to manage down your expectations. They don't want to attract attention to themselves, so they may suggest, well, we think we're worth a little bit less than that. And then there's the third type, the sort of, I would say, more dangerous type, which are trying to manage up your expectations and suggest their wealth significantly more. Now, we have to be really firm with them and tough with them, because and say, well, if you think you're worth that, can you prove it? Can you prove it to us? Because it's absolutely important that the readers get a product that they trust, that the Sunday Times Rich List is felt to be authoritative and correct, and it's not used by people to somehow make themselves look more kosher than they are to perhaps get more business.
Mm. Now, you said it's not super yacht to super yacht. However, you do get to meet a few of them. So the lunch dates, when they do happen, they must be pretty spectacular. Or have I got that wrong?
Well, they're a real mix, to be honest. Yes, there are occasionally some very nice lunches. Often, actually, it's more prosaic than that. I met one chap fairly recently whose business is worth several hundred million pounds. He wears a Marks & Spencer suit. He pridefully tells me that he has two other Marks & Spencer suits. Private equity approached him to buy out his business for a lot of money, and he told me, Why would I possibly want to sell my business? I love my business. I want to carry on doing it. I have my three Marks & Spencer suits. I go on holiday a couple of times a year. What more could I possibly want? There has been occasionally a very nice lunch here and there, but generally speaking, these people are busy. They don't necessarily have time for long, lavish lunches. Often they just want to have a quick coffee, show you their accounts, get back to running their businesses.
Are they happy en masse, and are they happier because this is the Brexit podcast? Do you think they're happier now the EU referendum has taken place?
Two big questions there. Taking the sort of happiness in general question, I think that is probably one of the things I think about most when I'm compiling the rich list, to be honest. I don't think wealth necessarily, when we're talking to these stage, makes that big a difference. There's a very interesting guy with Jack May, the founder of Alibaba, in the last few months, in which he said, a few million is all you need. After that, the problems start mounting up. A really interesting idea. It's almost as if these people have, the more you have, the more you have to worry about, the more you have to worry about losing. One guy in particular who's good enough to speak to us is based largely in Monaco these days, and he was talking to me about having a friend calling up to him while he was still in the office at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night, and his friend was downstairs with a smaller yacht than him, worth a good deal less than him, asking him down for drinks, and the guy said, "I'm sorry, I can't. I'm just too busy." Who's got it right? The guy said to me, who's worth a lot more with the bigger yacht, or is it my friend down there enjoying the drinks and enjoying the life?
Yeah.
It's a real, I don't think wealth alone is any determinant of how happy you are. It's a very different question. Now, when you come to Europe, you come to Brexit, that is very, very interesting. Now, the cliche trotted out again and again that we've all heard so many times is business wanted certainty and they didn't want the disruption of Brexit. But I heard very, very different stories from all the people who we talked to, and some very, very surprising things.
So with some of them, sounds like some of them had clearly voted to leave, and some of them were quite keen to give you their reasons for that as well.
Yes, that's right. I mean, we're talking about 1,000 people in the Sunday Times Rich List, and probably 1,000 different points of view. So I thought, for example, property people would be very, very worried. I thought they'd be worried that that Brexit would trigger a property crash and that the value of their holdings would diminish.
Hmm.
Well, possibly there were some, there certainly were some who were. I was speaking to a London-based property guy who told me recently that he was on the phone to a council soon after Brexit, saying that, you know, if the London market dies and lots of people leave the UK, would you take my flats or some of my flats for housing association for council use?
Right.
But then again, I was speaking to someone quite heavy duty in the London market who also saw Brexit as a massive buying opportunity. He was hoping for a crash because he's got lots of money in the bank, and a big fall in the value of London property would be a great buying opportunity for him. So a real mix. I mean, generally speaking, I think the greater divide that we talked about at the time, didn't we? We talked about older people often being a bit more relaxed about the idea of leaving the EU, more in favour, and younger people being concerned. I think I certainly saw a lot of that. I remember one older bloke saying, in the manufacturing sector, saying he was quite relaxed about that, thought that, yes, Europe was 40%, I think, of his business, something like that, was going to export, but he was confident that the Europeans would still want to buy our stuff.
Yeah. There was a report actually out just today, commissioned by the City UK, that said up to 75,000 jobs could go in the financial sector. It could cost up to £38 billion. Is that greatly going to affect your rich listers? And would they be worried about this? I mean, how much are they tied to the markets?
It's very interesting. I mean, as we're talking, the FTSE is close to an all-time high as it's ever been. I think there are two questions there, aren't there? Is our economy going to be different in a year or two or 3 years' time because of Brexit? And then secondly, are lots of people going to leave the UK? A lot of these super rich people going to leave. Taking the second question first, a lot of these people, they come to the UK because of the education system, because of the power of the City of London and all those firms, associated firms around it, because Britain is really cool. I mean, it's got a social scene that a lot of these people like. It's got everything from opera to Wimbledon to test match cricket, if that's your thing. And a lot of people...
You're showing your hand there, Rob, a little bit with the opera.
But London and the UK has a draw that other countries don't have. And they're quite embedded here. A lot of them really feel Britain is where it's at and they want to stay. And I don't think membership of the EU is likely to change that for many of them, but I'm sure there will be some. And I expect we may lose a few people as a result, but I wouldn't expect it to be a big issue. Now, in terms of the economy, is that going to be different? I think it's very, very difficult to see. I mean, they say economic forecasters exist to make weather forecasters look good. It's very, very difficult. It's very difficult to predict these things, isn't it? But I think one of the things that people in the city are certainly getting very excited about at the moment is passporting. It's this fact, will you be able to sell financial services in other European Union countries? And there is a significant number of rich listers who are financial services. Not as many as I necessarily thought when I started this job.
Yes.
But they could be affected. But, you know, the other side of it is that our manufacturing sector and we are still, despite what everyone tells you, what may say, that we don't do any manufacturing anymore. We certainly do in this country. I think we're the seventh biggest manufacturing economy in the world. We do make a lot of stuff that goes overseas, and a low pound helps manufacturers out. So when they're exporting. So very difficult to say. On balance, what I'm struck by the conversations I've had in the last few weeks, there are not many doomsayers. Most people are quite positive, but I can think of one big player in the pharmaceuticals industry who's very worried about being taken outside of the single market for regulation and how Britain will need to create regulations for his industry very, very quickly if they're going to be, if Britain is going to be seen as reputable as it was when it was in the EU.
Yes, yes.
But
do you think that prevailing attitude is why they are where they are? I suppose that they see opportunities, and even in this, they see that whilst one door closes, many more might open up, and that's what's got them to this state of wealth in the first place.
I think there's a lot of truth in that, Tim. Yes, I think these are. By and large, these are incredibly positive, problem-solving, optimistic, driven people who spot opportunities. And there are lots of people in the rich list who will be thinking, how can we grow our business as a result of Brexit?
Yeah.
What can we do? What can we change to take advantage of this? How can we make it work? There's another side, though, and of that personality, which is also very important, which is fear of failure. Which is, I've spoken to billionaires who talk vividly about starting out, talk about their teen years. Often these are people who come from extremely humble backgrounds, and who push themselves relentlessly hard and keep pushing themselves because they feel almost as if it could all disappear.
Mm.
And that's very important too. And I think that in itself, there will be some of these people who will be working even harder because of Brexit, because they'll want their business to continue to survive and thrive in the Brexit world.
Everything that you do, I know that you do spend quite a lot of time looking at the stats, looking at the figures too, but it does sound a really interesting role you have. Do you enjoy it yourself?
I do, yes, very, very much. I think the most inspiring thing about it is how, I wouldn't say every walk of life is here, but when I started this job, I thought it's going to be hedge fund managers, it's going to be private equity barons, it's going to be inheritance. But actually what I see, my day-to-day is looking at these entrepreneurs, these people who often start quite late in life and who make a success, work very hard, and 10 years later are sitting on a £100 million business. For example, I was looking only the other day at a couple of brothers who in their 40s hadn't really set the world on fire. One of them had an advertising career that hadn't really thrived. The other one had made soft toys in his spare time. They got around the table and said, right, should we give it a go? Should we try and start a business selling soft toys? Well, those two brothers were the Gataker brothers who make those beautiful jelly cat soft toys you might have come across. and 10 years later, it's a £100 million business. And it's those sorts of stories that I love, that I enjoy watching.
Yeah. So, final question for you is: how do you see the rich list looking next year, 5 years, in 10 years' time? And will we look back and say that the EU referendum was a defining moment in how it's shaped and how the rich of this country is kind of laid out?
Well, really good question. I think you've asked a lot of those really interesting questions already, actually. I mean, I think, will the international contingent in the rich list, will that change? Will Brexit make a big difference to that? Will a lot of these people decide that London, that the UK is no longer the place to be? If I had to take a punt, I'd say no. I was sitting in hotel owned by someone somewhere in the UK. I won't say exactly where, but he said to me that he was offered more than £100 million for this building a few months before, and he said to me, I'd be nuts to sell it, wouldn't I? That would be a really strange thing to do. And I said, well, it depends how much you need £100 million. And he said, well, it's going to be worth £200 million in 10 years' time, isn't it? You know, Britain's where it's at. You know, Britain's, you know, where else can you get, you know, a great, all that London has to offer, all that the UK has to offer. It's unique. So I would think London will, and the UK will keep its appeal. I think what else we'll see, which is not really Brexit related, I think we'll see a more and more diverse rich list. I think we'll see more and more. I'm just starting to see more and more people from farming backgrounds, from small boutique fashion chains getting into the bottom end of the rich list, more tech coming, and I don't necessarily think that's Brexit affected, but generally speaking, I think at the moment I think the signs are really good, but it's still very, very early days. You know, Britain hasn't left the EU yet. It's probably not going to happen for a couple of years, so it's very, very early days, but I think so far so good.
Okay, Rob, I won't keep you any longer. Thank you ever so much for your time today. Really appreciate it. It's fascinating insight into the life of a Sunday Times rich list compiler.
And that's it for today. I really hope you enjoyed the show. And if you did, please do feel free to subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher so you'll be notified whenever we upload a new episode and you'll be able to tune in. In the meantime, you can find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Brexit Podcast. The show is produced by Jennifer Han, Tim Hemming, and Warren Pohl, and our theme song is Cool Vibes by Kevin McLeod.